Welcome to the program. It's 1:14. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got two concerns really.
Mm-hmm.
One would have been with the 80,000 people, but I'm not going to go into all of that, seeing that somebody had brought it up. All I want to say is that if, for sake of argument, 500 people out of this 80,000, I don't know what percentage that might be, but if 500 people of this 80,000 people happen to acquire some form of transportation, how are we going to cope with 500 extra vehicles on our roads that in such a state as it is already? And the other thing that I wanted to talk about was these airlines that want to come to fill in Liat, the bridge that Liat has left. They're being made a sound as if they're the best thing that happened to us since sliced bread. My concern is, what is the government doing, if anything, with these airlines, if they're asking them to deposit any kind of money in the treasury so that I don't lose my money again like I lose it with RedJet or like I lose it with Liat? These are my two concerns.
Well, I don't know that the problem that you face with Liat, do excuse me a minute. Yeah, the problem that you're talking about, we're having competition, huh? And one is hopeful that in this new approach, we're not going to have a situation where the governments are pumping money into an airline to keep it afloat in the way that we've had to do with with Liat. I'll come right back to you shortly. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Ellis. I'm not saying that I'm asking the government to put up money for these airlines. What I'm saying is that if there's anything in place that if you open in a service, that you should have some kind of money deposited in the treasury in case of something like this didn't happen.
Okay.
There was an article in the Sunday Sun. This guy was at RedJet's counter, and he bought his ticket, paid for his ticket at RedJet's counter. 5 minutes after he paid for his ticket, he was told that RedJet isn't running any longer, but he couldn't get back his money. The man left the counter, you know, he no paying any money right there. What did they do with the man money? He said that he got back his money but from RedJet, but he didn't really get back his money from RedJet as such. He got back his money from either Williams Industries or from Busy Williams, because that's where the check mark, RedJet. So because probably that Mr. Williams was part of RedJet, that he decided to refund him. So, dear, in my opinion, if you're not asking these people to deposit some kind of money in the treasury, you're giving them a green light to carry people's money. As simple as that. Because they know the way that even if you don't get back all, you should at least be getting back a part of your money. RedJet 1, Liat 2. Now, these people that come in, ask them to do something so that something similar don't happen again. The people, you know.
Understand
one other thing
everyone,
before
yeah.
we go, one other thing. This thing about staycations now.
Right.
They're asking you to do staycations. They're promoting it. But yet still, you can't get a four-day staycation anywhere from Bear Street to Oystens, either on the seaside or the landlight on the Audi land side, for less than $600 for 4 nights. And you advocating and promoting staycation for local.
But the question is how how much of a demand there is for it. Because you know the price is influenced by demand.
Okay.
There's a distinct possibility that a lot of Barbadians who haven't been able to travel outside of the country are trying to take advantage of it. No. That would
that's probably even more reason that you could get a Brit. $610 a lot. get a little $500 or anything. So
well, you know, you also have to take into consideration the losses that a lot of these establishments have suffered as a result of COVID. So you know, when you say A, you gotta say B.
Yeah, I agree too. But then some of the places empty, Mr. Ellis.
Well, for some of the operators, that would mean that they have to catch whatever they can.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello. Hi, David.
1:25 in the afternoon. Yes, sir.
Hi. How are you doing, man?
I am well. And you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Look, I heard Tallboy in a discussion with you earlier, talking and showering praises on Dr. Rowley, Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm.
But you joining that celebration?
No, I didn't talk about Dr. Rowley. I was talking about the Commissioner of Police.
Yes,
He spoke about the Commissioner of Police too.
Gary Griffith, man. You know, this man is very colorful. And I would say, though, I think that we have a very good police service in Barbados. We have a decent, and all of our commission of police was on the decent side, right? But I believe that you want a few Gary Griffiths around Barbados, though. You know, when Gary Griffiths, commissioner of police in Trinidad and Tobago, could challenge the prime minister, you understand? It just shows you the mettle of the man. And in his recent mouthings, even leading up to the election in Trinidad and Tobago, and before then, the man speak with robust. The man was very adamant in the things that he was speaking, and he always stayed on the side of the police force that he led. And I am seeing that, to me, Gary Griffiths, I like Rowley. I love Dr. Rowley. But I got a special liking for Gary Griffiths. I think that Gary Griffiths is an outstanding commissioner of police. He don't be afraid to talk to you guys in the media, and he don't be afraid to go and confront where the disturbance are. So to me, he is a gazetted commissioner that walking the walk and talking the talk. You see he that there?
Who you mean, the commissioner?
Gary Griffiths. Commissioner of Police in Trinidad.
Well, he brings a different style.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that you have to really ask is, how is that particular style paying off in the fight against crime in Trinidad and Tobago? You know, Trinidad has had an increase in murders over the years. That is something that you would want that the commissioner and all of his efforts. He's out there on the ground at times. The people who, when you make that comparison with Barbados, they will say, well, but you know, commissioner, that's not a commissioner's job to be out there on the ground. But that's his way of trying to inspire people. Like, I think the last commissioner that I saw in Trinidad operating like that was Randolph Burroughs.
It's a long
time ago.
But he was a Bajan. You know that Randolph Burroughs was a Bajan.
I'm not sure what he was.
Yeah.
But is it paying off? This also has put him in a position where there are death threats against him and all sorts of stuff.
That happened all the time. I'm sure, Mr. Griffiths. I believe Mr. Griffiths will have a death threat also. But I am saying to you, David, the last robust police commissioner that we had in Barbados was our regime. You remember that?
I would tend to agree with you.
Yeah, Albert Durant was very, very, very outstanding. I mean, he led up he led a team and he lead from the front. I was really impressed with Gary Griffith. However, David, I want to look at this thing about, you remember a star marshal?
Yes, used to be called Cement the Man. Cement Man.
You remember 20 years ago, a star marshal, the Cement Man.
So then we needed to increase the population.
Used to tell you, and used to tell you, man, you got to use a more really friendly language. Because you used to talk about this thing about breeding. Women need to breed more. You remember that, David?
I remember that he was promoting that idea a lot.
Right. So all I'm saying.
And I got somebody who was emphatic in saying that Burroughs was not a Barbadian.
Okay, well, sorry, we'll start. If I mislead the listeners, I humbly apologize. But I was told so. So, you know, I could be wrong. But this is what I'm saying, David. Back in 20 years ago, Cement Man is saying that we need to increase the population of Barbados. Ronald Jones, last minister of education, also echoed that same sentiment. Prime Minister Motley now doing the same thing. And I am saying to you, when you look at the numbers and you look at the island size of Barbados and Singapore, right, and the population, I believe that Barbados need more people. I am that firm believe that Barbados need more people, because if you get more people and this thing with coming in visa stamp, I think that's a brilliant move, buddy. I think to come and work here, do your work here, from Sea Rocks in Barbados, and you still conducting business in your homeland from Barbados, I think that's a brilliant move. You just don't criticize and say it. I got my issues with one or two of the policies, but I like this policy. I really like the policy. And I like Prime Minister Motley's last sentiment in respect to the population growth. We need more people in Barbados. And we didn't need more people yesterday. We need more people 25 years ago.
All right, sir. Welcome to the next caller. Hello. 131. You're on the air.
Peace be unto you in the name of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Good afternoon.
Today, Mr. Ellis, I want to talk about banking. But I want to be guided in this area. If you work for somebody, you bank could accept a check from them to go to the bank. Like in my case, as an electrician, carpenter, or
if you're bound to accept the check?
You're bound to accept the check?
I don't think so.
Right. Now, there's something that was worrying me for years, Mr. Ellis. People call you to discuss work with you, and they tell you all what they want done and everything like that. But at the end of the day, you cannot discuss money. You as a business person or young businessman, or, you know, you should be able to ask the person at the end of my work, how are you going to pay me? When are you going to pay me? How, you know what I mean? In what terms? You understand what I'm saying? And if I'm going to finish the job on Friday, don't wait till Friday to then tell me you're expecting some money from some place in Honolulu or something, and then I got to go home to my family without the check. What I am saying to workers today, young entrepreneurs, do not take a check from anybody if you're the business person. You're a workman, you're an electrician, you don't got to go and spend time in the bank. You work for money, then you gotta go and spend time in the bank to get the money. That is foolishness. Let the person get cash and give you. So when I heard the caller talking about this chap in the bank, you know, sometimes people, Mr. Ellis, people give you a check. First thing, they put the wrong date on the check. they spell a name or spell something wrong. Sometimes the check number, the numerical value don't match the writing of the check. And then again, there are a lot of youngsters who don't have a bank account. If you don't, if I don't have a bank account, will you give me a check? So, Mr. Ellis, I think that the young people need to be advised on this matter and tell the people who they know you're calling people to work. Don't call the people to work and then look for the money. Look for the people money first and then call the people to work, Mr. Ellis. So I really believe that, you know, I didn't know this thing is still going on, but it is hurtful. I ain't got no right taking a check from nobody. And after I done work, I go and stand up in the bank and beg for the money. Then here, the girl with a nice smile tell me, well, Mr. Lewis, I'm sorry, I can't honor this check. It happened to me on many occasions. So, Mr. Ellis, I do believe you can speak to that matter.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hello?
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Mr. Ellis, two yes, small sir. Points. Firstly, the road at Rendezvous, the new, as the minister, I think he was misunderstood. He said an express lane. Because you know some people have been driving today. They really think it's an express lane. So I think that they need to tell the people to drive within the speed limit. The people are driving on that little slip road so quickly. I tried to swing out today out of the driveway, and the traffic is coming at you like if they're on the highway still driving at 80. So I think that something needs to be said there, because he said express, and I guess people misunderstood when he said it was an express lane.
Okay.
Secondly, governance. Now, in Barbados, now it was refreshing to hear the minister speak to his PS being competent, because nowadays nobody really hears about the permanent secretaries who are very well paid. So you find that you have ministers who come with foot and mouth, what I call foot and mouth disease, in that they're not technical, but they help make the law, but then they come to speak to it, to interpret it as well, whereas there's a governance problem, there's a conflict there, because if it's the day-to-day running shouldn't be at the behest of the person who was involved in making that law. And I'm seeing it a lot where before, the PSA will come and they would speak to things, but now all of a sudden, all you see is the minister. And I think it is wrong for governance. If you're looking at integrity and everything, then you cannot have the minister who goes to Parliament to make law and then wants to get into the administration of that law. When you get a chance, Mr. Ellis, I want you to look at the new customs bill. And something in there is...
What's your concern there?
At Section 3.2, the minister has a say in the... is to have a say now in the administration of the custom. That is unheard of. It ain't good for governance either, because a minister has his role, as I said, go to Parliament, change the law, but then he can't come and do the administering as well.
I noted that they had inserted that particular clause in their legislation, and very few people have really taken it up as an issue. It's an issue for you.
For governance.
Mm-hmm.
Why? If the art, for instance, you just had in Trinidad, you listen to Mr. Rowley, he says he cannot instruct the commissioner, and he's the prime minister. In the same way, the minister shouldn't be able to instruct a comptroller either. He could make the policy. The policy comes from ministerial, and it comes down through the PS to the, let's say, the comptroller. And then he does the whatever general administration that he's responsible for. The minister has no place in there. The ministers.
What's the danger?
The danger?
Mm-hmm.
That it got real dangerous. To get it, the minister, as I said, he makes the law, so he can't come to deal with things administering that law. there's a conflict of interest, and there's no separation of the powers. How if I am the man making that law in Parliament, and then I come to administer it as well, don't you say something wrong there? Don't you see problems when we are speaking of all this integrity in public life, etc.?
Well,
don't you see an issue?
The whole idea here is the strengthening of the power of the minister under this particular legislation. And, you know, you always run the risk of the fear of political interference.
Exactly.
That is what is at stake here. The other question is, to what extent are we seeing more of the legislation going in that direction? I don't know of any other piece that has basically made that kind of leap. But, you know, we've had so much legislation passed in the recent, since 2008, that we haven't even been able to keep pace with all of it.
Well, I normally try to keep pace, and that's the first time, I'm not talking for Caribbean white, that's the first time in a Barbados legislation
where
you have, let's say, commissioners of police, controllers of customs, where the minister would be involved in the administration.
Yes. And you
so
see,
it's a worrying thing. I don't know if the legal luminaries could look at it, or perhaps if the AG could take a relook and see the implications there, because it got to be seen to be a fair and, as I said, integrity, it got to be a fair system. And if it's fair, it got to be appeared to be fair to the average Barbadian as well.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for your contribution. Down to brass tacks. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Okay, thanks. For some time I've been discussing this severance situation in Ireland, and in listening to Mr. Franklin there today, there's a question I want to leave with you. As a matter of fact, two questions. Now, I read an article sometime recently, and it highlighted the situation in Barbados as a labor crisis. Now, the question I want to ask is, Mr. Franklin made a point about if some time pass and you don't get your, you don't submit, the question I want to ask is what will happen? Because you mentioned something about 30 years, some people having 30 years in this. And if there's a mix-up, some people don't understand clearly what's happening, what's transpiring, and they're in the dark. And it comes to a point where they don't get the severance because they didn't apply in time or whatever. That wouldn't sound like a case of litigation or something, because somebody's got to protect these people. As I see it.
It depends upon what the law says, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's influenced by what the statute says.
Yeah, but as I see it, right now as we speak, and you got your work cut out, is the government, the union, the workers, the employer. That person used their term, they said labor crisis. I say it's a labor mayhem going on in Ireland.
All right.
And this is, hello?
I'm going to have to leave you because I got somebody else here online talking about this problem with the banks. And, you know, I just heard a reference to Senior Citizens Month. So this is September is supposed to be Senior Citizens Month. And it's appropriate that we look at matters as they impact on the senior citizens of our country. I have the president of the Barbados Association of Retired Persons, better known as BARP, and that is Marilyn Rice Bowen. She is on the line with us. Good afternoon, Ms. Bowen. Ms. Rice Bowen. We were having some problems.
That's all
right. You can hear me.
Yes, you're hearing
okay,
me too.
Okay, we're
as
hearing
now?
You now. Yes, very well.
Good.
Some concerns have been raised about one aspect of how two of the banks in Barbados are dealing with checks that are supposed to be cashed by them that they're refusing. And I understand that from your vantage point in BARP, you have a list of concerns that you're raising. What are those concerns?
Well, one
I think we've lost you. So your audio is going and coming. So it looks as though we will have to, You are muted, and that's the problem. For whatever reason, her microphone is muted, so you have to come back to her. Yes,
but
we missed part of what you said at the beginning because your mic was muted. So let's
start I'm sorry.
Over. Yeah.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. What I'm saying is that the Caribbean-based banks, BART research revealed that the Caribbean-based banks, they have not taken that move. It is only the Canadian banks, the international bank. So we need to dig a little deeper to what is...
We're going to call you because we're going to call you back because your line is just not good enough for us to pursue it right now. So let's call her, put on the telephone and see if that will improve her communication with us. Let's take a call in the meantime, another call. Hello?
Good afternoon, Ms. Alex.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick with you then. With regards to the increasing population that seems like Barbadians are a bit worried about, I don't think it's a need to be too worried because the present state of our infrastructure cannot handle an increase of 80,000 people, period. You have to look at first improving the infrastructure of the country by means of roads.
How many tourists come into Barbados on an annual basis?
I can't remember the last figure, to be quite honest.
Is the infrastructure capable as it is right now?
Well, that's temporary, you know.
It's temporary? But on a continuous basis over a year, how many people come through Barbados? A lot.
Well, hundreds of thousands, but I don't know the figure. I can't remember the last figure. Yeah. But still, you'll be talking about people living, working here on a permanent basis.
And you're also saying that those people will be working in such a manner as to contribute to economic growth that will allow you to do those things. That is the crux of why this particular argument is being made. It is looking at how this will actually translate into economic growth.
No, I'm not against it, you know. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying the present infrastructure cannot handle it. That's what I'm saying. But I'm
Is it proposed that this infrastructure will remain as is?
I didn't hear that, sorry.
Is it proposed that this present infrastructure will remain as is?
No, I don't think so. That's why I'm saying callers are getting something is getting anxious. Like if it's going to happen tomorrow or next week or this year. I don't think that the Prime Minister is that, you know, short-sighted.
The Prime Minister needs to discuss it with the people. It's as simple as that.
Right.
I mean, she needs to find ways and means of communicating the details of this, because she's spoken about it on a number of occasions, but she's just left basically the general picture that our population hasn't been growing, we're deficient in this regard, and something has to be done. So that's what we've been left with, but it needs a bit more than that, clearly. Let me see if we have Marilyn Rice-Bowen. Yes, are you there?
I'm here.
Yes, with the few minutes that we got, Ms. Bo, 8 minutes or so, tell me.
I'm saying to you, let me repeat. BART did some research, and it revealed that the Canadian banks, they're the banks that have this policy in place, but it's not the same with the Caribbean-based banks. BART is very concerned about this because what it is pushing people or seniors to do is to have cash at home to pay, like, you know, a handyman or any person working with them. So, you know, and which will, of course, open our seniors to robberies and stuff like that. We met with the Bankers Association in July, and we discussed the online banking and the use of the ATM and the lack of adequate accommodation for seniors. And, of course, we discussed the high fees. And we shared with them that our view then was that the banks are not senior friendly. What we have decided since that meeting is to meet with the policymakers, because although we met with the Bankers Association, just as like this, just as now, like today, how we have realized that some banks are instituted this thing with the checks and other banks haven't, it would suggest that the Bankers Association, they don't all operate on the same platform. So we've found the need to meet with the policymakers. What they have agreed to do, David, but this is just a tip. They have taken the decision to fully sponsor programs for us to teach our seniors how to use online banking. They are prepared to even bring like the ATM, a little machine set up, so they can take them through the paces. Because quite frankly, David, what has happened is that with COVID-19, whereas yes, we were exposing our seniors to the technology, everything has gone fast paced. So our seniors are lagging behind. What we've also recognized is that since the dialogue, we have recognized that quite a few of the banks, they have placed emphasis on catering to the needs of seniors. So they tell you to come on, and they have ambassadors dealing directly with seniors. We also called for, and we recognize that it is happening now, the fact that what we were saying is that the fees were too high. But what they are saying is that seniors before, once you reach the age 60 or 65, I think it's 60, you had to go into the bank and start the process to move from a normal account to a seniors account. And what they're doing now is once you've reached 65, it automatically triggers. So you move from your normal account into a seniors account, which allows you a reduction in some fees. Now, yes, there is a reduction, David, but we still need to talk about a further reduction, because you're addressing pensioners who are already on a reduced income. So BARP will continue the dialogue, but as I said, our next step will be to have the conversation with the policymakers. Or that step was slightly delayed because of COVID, but we will make it a reality very soon, because we recognize that, you know, every new rule, every new process is weighing heavily against our seniors. So we need to ensure that seniors feel comfortable enough. Because these are the banks that they saved their hard-earned money when they were, you know, like younger, and now they're reaching their senior years. They're being made to feel less than human, less than important, as if you are a bother when you come into the banking hall.
So what are you asking of the policymakers?
We're going to ask the policymakers basically to guide us. We want to know who really makes the rules, and like something like the checks, with cashing of refusing to cash checks, we would want them to reconsider such an action, because we don't know what is the thinking behind the rule, but certainly a check for $100, if anything, put limits. You should say, well, checks over X amount. But if somebody is paying $100 or $150, I mean, really and truly, to suffer the inconvenience of having to go to open an account to cash a check for $150, if you are there on the site, you've gone to present this check where the person has written the check, John Brown has written your check, and he banks at XYZ. You have your two pieces of ID. What more can they want?
Have you engaged RBC or Bank of Nova Scotia on this policy?
No, we haven't, because initially we thought that it was all the banks had taken the position. But having spoken to two of the Caribbean banks only this morning, they said no, that's not their position.
I'm also told that it is not the position of First Caribbean.
Okay, well, I can have another chat with the president. So it's just the two Canadian banks.
I understand it's those two banks that have instituted it. And really and truly, they should tell the public of Barbados.
Why
What has motivated them to do it?
Yes. Why? Yeah. Because it's a major inconvenience, David.
Definitely.
It's a major, and you know, it seems that every time a new rule, a new procedure is put in place, it's put in place to, like, it's anti the people.
Yeah.
You know, everything is anti the people. They have lost this sense of community. Even if they're being, if this is being pushed from their headquarters, this is the Caribbean. We do business different.
Well, thank you very much, Marilyn Rice Boyne from BARP. And thanks to all of you who participated in today's edition of the program. Of course, special thanks to those who were with us looking at childhood obesity at the start, in the first hour. I certainly hope that you found today's program interesting. I'm David Ellis, and I thank you also on behalf of Michelle Brathwaite, the technical operator and producer today. Do have a great afternoon.